Hi there, everybody, and welcome back. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM in your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Hey, you know, I keep watching and I keep watching and listening and I ask myself so often, oh, if only I had more time, I could maximize the stuff that I want to do. If only I had a few more people to work with, then I could do things. I say that to myself at times. I know it's not politically correct to speak out against a child that was Matty Stepanak. You know Matty Stepanak? Do you remember him? 2003, he had lived to be 4 years old, but he was a major poet. And he was a major poet, and they wrote songs about him. You could look him up on the internet. Quite a remarkable young boy. But the thing that mostly you would get from him is he would say, if only I didn't have muscular dystrophy, I would. And a lot of his songs and a lot of his poems were about the if-onlys. If only, then I would. How many if-onlys do you have in your life? I've got quite a few in mine, let me tell you. But how many do you have in your life? Let's think about them. If only I had enough money. Then what, friends? Then you'd be on vacation, then you wouldn't work, then you wouldn't. Then you'd give, then you'd what? If only I had enough love in my life. If someone loved me. If I had someone to love. If only I had the power. Then I could change things. I could make things happen. If only I had children. Then I would feel like I had meaning. If only I had grandchildren, then I would feel like I'm not getting old. If only I had a better job. If I had a better job, boy, then I could really feel happy in my work. If only I had a better neighborhood, and I didn't live in this horrible town with vacuous people, but I could live in a place where there were people who think. If only there was less noise. Everywhere I go, I hate the noise, right? The noise just contaminates me. If only there were better smells. I can't stand getting off the subway and smelling the garbage trucks. Which reminds me about 59th Street. You know, I walk past 59th Street a great deal. And 59th Street, which is Central Park South, has some of the fanciest living quarters in New York City. People pay millions to live there. Because it faces the park, but underneath it are all these horses and carriages, the smell of which permeates the air. And so this whole thing about living there right on 59th Street means you smell the horse dung all the time. I was with a man one day who, when he smelled it, he said to me, ah, makes me feel like my farm. He found it a charming smell. Do you think that all farmers live in those apartments on 59th Street? Or is it just one of those things where your attitude is what makes the difference? How about more if-onlys? If only I went to college. If only I had a degree. If only I became a doctor or a lawyer. Then there are other people who say, if only I had better parents, then I could feel loved. If only I lost weight. If only I gained weight. If only I had bigger breasts. If only I had a different body. How about this? If only I could eat right, because I'm so addicted to sugar and candy and fats and salts. If only. If only I had more time. You getting frustrated by this yet, my friends, listening to it? Because you've all said, many of them, if only I had more time. Oh, wait, more time. Wow. If only I were, if only I could sleep more. You know, oh, if I got more sleep. If only I could get more exercise. These are the if-onlys. And I'm sure some of you are thinking right now about more if-onlys. If-onlys that you've lived with in your life. If only I didn't have this illness. If only I didn't have this or that. If only I wasn't this thing or that thing. If only. If only is one of the ways we manipulate our mind to keep ourselves from facing our underlying depression. The if only is a way that keeps us from dealing with being okay in the here and now. What is if only? If only is hope. And there, how could there be anything wrong with hope? How could there be? Hope is what we go to church for, you know? Faith, hope, charity. Hope is supposed to be very good. Well, we have to think about that a little bit. I remember once I was in Paris, and I went to the Holocaust Museum in Paris, which is underground. It's right near the river, and you go down underneath this Holocaust Museum, and there's a guard there, a French guard, who, like a military man or a soldier or a policeman. And you go through, and what you go through is, in effect, you're looking through prison cells. Prison cells where people were mounted one on top of another, but locked behind these cells. So I guess it wasn't Auschwitz or something like that, but it was, these were prison cells, where the Jews were kind of locked up in the cells. And as you know, the treatment was horrible. And there was, down at the end, there was a light bulb hanging down. And I remember saying very specifically, oh, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And the guard stopped me and said, no. He said, that was the biggest crime we did for people that were done to the Jews. The light at the end of the tunnel, he said, because what they did was they kept telling you there was a hope somewhere. They kept telling you, you know, well, you're going to work, you're going to go to Poland, and we'll put you on train to Poland. And when you get there, you'll be able to meet your family. Always a light at the end of the tunnel, and as they marched you into your death shower. The light at the end of the tunnel, living for the hope. If only I could live in a place. If only I lived in another time. How about that? If only I lived back when people were gentle. This is a question we have to ask ourselves, friends. We have to ask ourselves the questions of what is the value of the if only? And could people live without if only? Could they? Do we need this? Is this part of the human condition? To have a hope, a dream, a prayer, an if only. Because most people who talk about if only talk about it with remorse. You know, they say, oh, if only I didn't have to take this commutation. If only I didn't have to be on this train. If only I didn't have to. And it's more than a plan. You know, I plan. They say, well, then there it is. My determination is I must find more money. I got to get a better job. I got to find better love. I have to get more power. I have to have children. I have to have grandchildren. I got to get a better job. I better move. I have to go to where there's less noise. I have to get better smells in my life. I better go to school and get a degree. And all of your if-onlys turn into some task that you put in front of you and you regret for the rest of your life that you didn't get. Because the trouble is, every time you get one of your if-onlys, you have more if-onlys. If only I didn't have to travel by subway to New York, and then you get stuck in some town, and you say, if only I didn't live in this town. So then you move out of the town, and you say, oh, if only I didn't have... And if-only is a plague. If we took it away, what would happen? What would we have to face? Here's my idea. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I think if only is kind of an interesting thing. I think it's a kind of a thing where if you think about it considerably, if only I weren't, and you eliminated the if only, what would be left? If you took every prayer and hope and dream out of your life for the moment, how or would it be possible to find beauty in what's left over? Well, that's a great question. If you research If Only and Depression on a computer, you'll find that one of the descriptions of depression is if onlys, right? And the patient comes to you and says, if only this, if only that, if only this, if only that. You, as a diagnostician, in your mind say, oh, that's depression. If you say the other signs they have of depression is this thing about reality. They say, you know, I see reality, and reality is terrible, and I have no meaning in the world. You, as a diagnostician, you know when you hear somebody say that, that is depression. When a person talks about powerlessness, if only my husband, I could leave my husband, but I can't leave my husband because he gives the money for the family. If only I could do that, so then that's another sign of depression. Signs of depression always include some kind of powerlessness with some projection of how things would be better if just things got better. You know, the people who win the lottery aren't very happy. We don't see much happiness coming from that. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So we're emptying. We're going somewhere. Where are we looking for? What are we looking for underneath it? Are we looking for some kind of place to find out what goes on, what holds you back? You know, 75% of the people in the world with deep depression do not seek treatment. Part of the question we ask is, why don't they seek treatment? Well, what holds them back? Why don't they just do something about it? The trouble is, many people find their depression home. It is the home where they live. They would rather have that than anything else. And that's not all, you know. How family members, society as a whole, and how we perceive ourselves and react to depression can literally paralyze any efforts a person might make towards getting help as well. Depression seems to be what a person feels when they walk around saying, if only. And what happens with the if only? What happens if you'll notice about your if onlys? You have agitation with it. So you're angry. If only I didn't have to smell that garbage truck. If only I didn't have to get on the subway. If only it weren't so crowded. And there's agitation with it. And the agitation that comes with it is anger. And then what comes with that is powerlessness. I can't do anything about it. So now you have the two ingredients of depression, powerlessness and anger, which when they go together, you get depression. Okay. What's wrong with depression? Maybe depression is reality. Maybe the people with the big hopes and dreams, maybe they're keeping themselves out of the universal reality of a general depression. Maybe the whole world is depressed. And maybe just some people sing their way out of it, you know? They keep themselves out of it by dancing along, by having love, by having prayers, by having children, by growing flowers, by having all your different things you do that seem to make life beautiful. Maybe that's what keeps you going. Maybe if you had nothing to do, you had to sit in a room all by yourself with nothing to do, you'd feel this kind of malaise there. That's the question. Do you ever ask yourself, what would happen if I stopped hoping? Or if not only hoping, what would happen if I stopped if only? So but then we have another question. If only I didn't do if only. So it gets a step deeper. So, my friends, I'm taking you on a journey down towards the inside. I have been a therapist for 40-some-odd years. I have seen a lot of people who have, let me see if it's 40-some-odd years. They started in 66. How many years is that? 40-some-odd years. I have seen some people go through stuff that is just amazing. I have seen spectacular curing of blindness. I have seen people who are crippled walk. I have seen people who are catatonic wake up and speak. And I facilitated that. I was a part of it. Now, maybe it was what I did. Maybe it was what I didn't do. Maybe because I was just good looking. But whatever it was, my attention and that person together somehow made these people better. Not all people, but a lot of people. Very depressed people became undepressed. How did that happen? I wasn't giving medications, I wasn't giving drugs, I wasn't giving suggestion, I wasn't telling them to exercise. What was the thing that was going on? Well, something was going on. Some of them got better. The majority of them seem to have gotten better, but maybe that's, I'm even fooling myself. Maybe that's just the majority that stayed, you know, and some other ones left and they didn't get better, but I don't count them in my statistics. But most of the people who stayed around got better. And I have a lot of tools. I have a lot of ways to help people to get better, but I'm not tooting my horn because, you know, I don't do therapy anymore, so I'm not advising anybody come and see me. This is the idea, though. The idea was you learn different ways into different people to help different people. Just as many of you who are helpers of people, the nurses, the attendants out there, you know different people respond to different things. And that you can help people with different tools that you have. You can help people with information. If a person comes to you and they say, I don't know what's wrong with me, I have this, and you just give them information. Well, look, here's the way it is. Here's what it is. Here's the medicine. Here's the way you can treat it. Here's who you consult with. And information sometimes helps people. Sometimes exposing the reality underneath their reality helps them a great deal. For example, a person comes to you and says, oh, I'm so mad at myself, I'm angry at myself, and I'm always talking bad about myself, and you show them they're really angry at somebody else. And you say, look, let's look, maybe you're not just yourself you're angry at, and here's an example of how you would do that. A person would say, I'm a fool. And you would say, imagine that you are sitting in that chair over there, and you were the one who was yelling at it. Say, you're a fool. And then say you're a fool to this other you, and say everything that comes to you, and you would say things like, you're a fool, you're no good, you don't do your homework, you don't go to... And then suddenly you would say to the person who was doing this, the patient who walked in, you'd say, now, who do you sound like? And they'd say, I sound just like my mother. And I would say, so that's where the source of this anger is. So now be the person in the other chair and talk back to your mother. And you talk back to your mother and you say, oh, Mom, and you, eventually you say to Mom, Mom, you're the fool, not me. And the minute you say it, there is spontaneous recovery. I have seen people go from depressed to non-depressed through this exciting behavior. It doesn't always work. Sometimes works. It's called the Gestalt Dialogue. Sometimes being able to feel aggression helps you. Now, I have a friend who claims that everything is chemical. She says no matter what you do, it's chemical. Well, she may be right. Because in effect, by the very act of a person becoming aggressive when they speak, they are changing their chemistry. They're shooting out different hormones. So chemistry has got to play a role in it. But chemistry doesn't necessarily have to be the cause. Nor is chemistry itself just the cure, even though most psychiatrists would like you to believe it. Attitude can help, but it doesn't always have to help. Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're talking about people who have these if-onlys in their life. And we're talking about what's underneath it. And before the end of today's show, before the end of today's program, I want to take you down to what I believe is a basis, a thing that underlies all of this, that may be the reason that all we have left, my friends, is hope and if onlys. And maybe it's not so wrong. Here's a poem written by a psychiatrist I know. I thought it was kind of beautiful. He's a psychiatrist who says, what works in psychotherapy? He said, that's far beyond the likes of me. I've only practiced 50 years and am still plagued by doubts and fears. I muddle on and try my best to aid my clients in their quest for ways of being more alive somehow, in spite of all, to thrive. I wish I knew the right technique to give them more of what they seek. The mystery of change persists, unsolved by dogged scientists. I hope that they will soon impart quick ways to heal a broken heart. My efforts stagger, balk, and lurch, unguided by precise research, to tell me how to ease life's pains, and thus flawed intuition reigns. Pray science soon will guarantee sure cures for human misery, but meanwhile, I'll do what I can without an absolutely validated plan. That's written by Tom Greening. I think that's kind of interesting because, you know, it's kind of the way most qualified therapists feel. I'm trying my very best. I'm doing what I do. So we're going back. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm going back with you to this very important question. The question is, if we took our thinking, our hopes, our dreams out of the picture, if we took the if-onlys, if only I had a better boyfriend, if only my boyfriend wasn't sick, if only my girlfriend wasn't sick, if only I didn't have this, if only I didn't have this apartment, if only, if only. If you took your if-onlys and you moved them out of your life, where would you be? Well, the assumption is, if I take away my if-onlys, here's how my life is going to be. I'm going to ride that subway in a sullen way. I'm going to be depressed. I'm going to walk. I'm going to get crushed by people. I'm going to smell foul odors. I'm going to go sit at some job that I hate. And I'm going to do it all day long by rote. At the end of the day, I'm going to get up and get back on that rotten subway and go home to a family who I don't like and who doesn't even like me, in a miserable town, in a town where everybody is so shallow you can't even talk to them, and then I'm going to be with them, and then I won't be able to sleep very much, and then I'll finally fall asleep, and I'll wake up and do the same thing all over again the next day. That's the image that people have if you removed the idea of complaining about the way life is, and by trying to, and of course it is a complaint, to say, if only. Because if only. See, now, if I could say, if only, I mean, I'm not saying I'm free of this, by the way, my friends, I do it myself. The way I discover most of my radio programs is by finding some flaw inside myself that I decide to check on and look on, and I find answers and I don't find answers. I repeat my problems over and over again, but I notice them and I say, okay, I may as well do some checking on this. So we're doing the if-onlys right now. But if you were to take your if-onlys and you were to put them aside, the question is, what sits there in place of it? What would be sitting there behind it? What would have happened in the Holocaust? What would have happened in one of those prisons where the prisoners who were held by this in these cells had no light? What would have happened? Well, you know what the Nazis believed. They believed that the people would gather in panic And that in panic they would go running out of their bedrooms, as the little huts that they had. And that in their running out, they would inadvertently knock over a guard. And by doing that, they would successfully get some kind of a weapon. And maybe the rebellion would have started. The en masse rebellion, instead of killing a million out of a million people, maybe you would have killed only 950,000 out of them. And maybe 50,000 would have survived. Maybe there was a way of rebelling, but you see, you were hypnotized by your if only. You were hypnotized by that bright light, by that wish at the end of the tunnel. So, one of the thoughts we have is, what is it that we would have to face? So when we get back from our break a little later, I am going to talk to you about what I believe exists underneath hope. Hope. I wish that everybody in the world were peaceful. I hope, if only, people realized that war was not the answer. If only people had enough money to feed their children food. If only the rich people turned around and said, you know, I feel really privileged for being this wealthy. Let me give some money to the poor. If only we had a health care system. I have if onlys. But those if-onlys are obscure if-onlys to me. They're kind of little hopes somewhere, and it's somewhere, yes, I would help if I could, if I knew how. But I don't get miserable from those if-onlys. There is not a misery attached to it. The test, according to the psychiatrists and researchers that I've read, is if your if-only is greeted by angst, then it's a fraud. Then no matter what you do with your if-only, if you take your if-only and you satisfy it and you say, oh, good, now I don't have to drive anymore into the city. I can take a horse and carriage. Or now my friends will drive me into the city. If you have something like that, then you find something else that's going to bother you. Because there's no limit to it. So I ask myself when I get caught in an if-only loop, what would I have to face underneath it? Big, big question. And some of the things I've done in my life is I've had to face those realities. And I'm a better man for it. I'm a luckier man to have been given the opportunity by some of the therapists and friends that I had who said, okay, buddy, you go through it, and we'll stand right here, and let's see what happens. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. Hey, listen, you know, one more thing before we take a break. I just discovered this incredible thing about Abe Lincoln. Abe Lincoln had a productivity secret. He said, if I had 6 hours to chop down a tree, I would spend the first 4 hours sharpening the axe. I think that's kind of remarkable to think about it. You know, if you're a chef, you have a thing called mise en place, which means preparing everything for when you're baking so that it's right on hand and right there in little cups and you're ready to pour it in, called mise en place. Abe Lincoln said, if I had 6 hours to chop down a tree, I would spend the first 4 hours sharpening the axe. Of course. Why didn't I think of that? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm going to take a short break. And when I come back, my friends, we will continue with more of this, and I'll give you my secret.
This name, I speak this language, it's not quite the same, for no other reason than this, it's my home, and the places I used to be, far from our God. You've traveled this long, you just have to go on. Don't even look back to see how far you've come. Though your body is bending under the load, there is nowhere to stop anywhere on this road.
A remarkable piece, Lhasa. Anywhere on this road. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. In case you just tuned in, we're on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We've been talking about the excuses of life that we make, and we have many. You know, we have... And the excuses, I am not being critical of excuses. I absolutely don't feel critical of them. Because I think sometimes it's all you got to keep going. You make excuses and you make excuses and you get by and you get by and you get by. And eventually you realize the excuses don't work anymore, so you don't do them anymore. But, you know, it's what people do. If you think about it just a bit, if we take it just a step further, there was a Pilibus Siris, who is a Latin writer, said, every vice has an excuse waiting. No matter what your vice is, there's an excuse waiting somewhere to be said for it. You know, why'd you eat when you didn't want to eat? Well, I was hungry and there was nothing in the house, right? Why'd you smoke that when you said you weren't going to smoke it? Well, I was tense because of my job. right? Why'd you snort that when you said you weren't going to snort that anymore? Well, I just found a little bit, but I was really under pressure. Every vice has an excuse waiting. Someone else I know said, if onlys are the nails for your coffin. He said, little by little, you keep putting them in your coffin because you keep saying to yourself, I've got this thing waiting underneath. What is waiting underneath? So, as dark as this sounds, my friends, as much as it sounds that we're talking about a harsh reality on this incredibly positive show called The Positive Mind, where I bring you all the joys of life as I see them, but not blindly, I'm going to tell you what I think sits underneath it. So let's think about this now. This is philosophical. By the way, talk about philosophical listening. Mike Feder, F-E-D-E-R, has come back to WBAI and is occasionally recording a program. And if you could get your hands on last week's program and listen to it and surrender, just listen. My God Almighty, what depth of programming there is. Just one of the great, great voices. I've got a... my hat's off to you, Mike, wherever you are. And thank you for being back. Such an honest man. An honest man meaning that he tells the truth about himself. Sometimes he talks so badly about himself that he's not being honest because he's just talking badly about himself. But what he has to say is just beautiful. All right, let's talk about what sits underneath it. So if I didn't have an if only, and let's say I was sitting somewhere in a room and I was angry with my wife and I was bitter and I was playing some video game just to fill my time. And I said to myself, if only I had a wife like the girl who works at the office, who's so beautiful, who's so nice to me all the time. If only I had somebody who loved me beautifully. If only. If you took the if only out of your life, and that meant the fantasy of another way of being. If you remove the other way of being, and you see yourself sitting in the middle of the quagmire that you're in that you want to escape. Imagine you're in it, in the middle of it. And now it's happening all the time. Now let's say you have a complaint about the smells of the city. And imagine you're just sitting in the middle of those smells. Well, like the people who live on 59th Street, if you're sitting in the middle of smells of horses, you know, and horses excrement all the time, what happens? Well, it disappears. Eventually, you don't smell it anymore. That's what happens. What happens is you get so accustomed to it, you don't smell it. What happens when you see things that are offensive to you, like all of us, see so much advertisement that we go blind to it? We don't see it. It doesn't fill our mind. What happens to you if you take any of these conditions that you experience and you accept them as they exist, and now I'm in it, and I refuse to think about some way out of it? I'm just going to be in it and accept it the way it is and accept myself in the middle of what it is. Well, people say if you do that, you're really going to get depressed. No, 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 no. Depression is fighting it. Depression is trying not to face reality. Depression is a retreat. Depression is closing the door on the cave. Depression is not a feeling state. It's a non-feeling state. How many of you are going to argue with me about that? You're going to say, oh, no, when I'm depressed, I'm crying all the time. That's not a feeling state. A feeling state is when you can identify a feeling like sadness and feel particular sadness. A feeling state is when you feel joy. A feeling state is something you could feel, not just as overwhelming blanket of a thing, of a mood. So if you don't have the escape of depression and you say, no, I am going to be, exist with what is, All right, let's say you have a fatal illness. Something horrible, something terrible, something that, you know, a real disaster of a feeling, something fatal maybe. And you say, okay, this is what I got. I am. Now, is there any alternative to depression for facing reality? So here's the question. If you're unhappy, and you if only all the time, if only I this, if only I get more exercise, if only I go swimming every day, if only I go jumping somewhere, if only I go meeting new friends, if only I go to parties, if only. If you say that to yourself, right, and you take those out of your life and you say, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to be with what is. I'm going to sit with what is. That's the question I ask myself. See, I'm one of these people who do this sometimes. And when I do it, I say to myself, I'm now saying to myself, don't always say to myself, what if I sit with this the way it is? What if you have somebody, for example, who doesn't love you the way you want them to love you, and you keep saying, if only she could love me the way I want her to love me, but instead you sit with the reality of what is, which is that maybe she doesn't want to, or maybe she can't, or maybe just one thing you know for sure, she doesn't give you what you want. Sit with it. Be with it. What's going to happen? Here's what's going to happen. You will maybe feel bad for a little while, but then you will feel yourself slipping. Slipping as if you're going into a void, as if you're going into some kind of quagmire, as if you're going into some kind of a deep hole. This hole I call the existential void. Now, the existential void is a kind of an interesting feeling. It's a haunting hollowness that goes to the depths of your being. And it's much worse than the ordinary kind of emptiness, which we attempt to fill by possessions, achievements, relationships, hopes, and dreams. But it is possible to go to the existential void. Now, I sometimes think that true insanity, which is defined as the inability to make contact with reality through the forms of hallucinations that you either hear or create or imagine or make things up, or you become paranoid and you make up things being persecuting, self being persecuted. I think all of that is an avoidance of an existential void. I think insanity is a way to avoid it, just as I believe hopes and dreams are. So it's a very interesting thing if you think about it. If you think about it, there is a place that is so deep to go to that we're afraid of it. Now, I remember once in my 20s, I was in therapy with a man named Peter Hogan, now deceased, great man, eventually became a great friend. And I remember Peter Hogan and I would say, this is just as I was discovering the New Age. And I said to Peter, it cost me $75 an hour, I remember, I said, Peter, I know you're a physician, here's what I want you to do. I want you to sit there and do nothing while I take this journey into my mind. And the journey I took was to let go of every possible thought and yet to stay in the room. And I let go and I let go and I let go and I let go, and things kept appearing and things kept appearing, and there was worry and concern and all this other stuff. And why did I want Peter there? I wanted Peter because I knew he was a physician, that if I was dying, he could give me a needle or something and bring me back to life. Because what I wanted to face and what I had to face was something akin to death. I had to face a non-existence. My gosh. I had to face not existing, not definition. I had to be somewhere and feel it all, feel what would be. And I felt a buzzing sensation. I felt this kind of electrical sensation going through my body. I felt myself sinking into a void, into a chasm. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I felt like I was just sliding away. And you know, the trouble was twofold. Number one, I had been a journeyer all my life, so I took this on as, you know, okay, here it comes now. Now I'm giving a definition as an experience, you see, so I'm giving it more meaning. The other thing is I was lucky to have Peter there, because Peter, I believe, would have warned me or cautioned me had something gone wrong. And as I was sliding all the way down, I was just had to open my eyes occasionally and say, Peter, is this okay? And he said, yeah, it's okay. I think he was doing his laundry list. I think he was writing down. I remember I saw the word milk on a piece of paper he was writing. He was doing his homework or doing something, you know. And I slid all the way down into this place, and I found this existential void, which is a place where there is no thing, nothing. Well, the Buddhists talk about this all the time. They say there's a wind blowing inside us through a wasteland of emptiness. He says where we begin to feel like useless seeds being blown around the desert. It's like an existential vacuum with an insatiable appetite. It wants to attach to everything. And somehow the idea is to face that. In some way, to find it, to look at it. It's not easy to do by yourself. I recommend, this is one of those exercises I do not recommend you do on your own. You know, like they show you those things on shows sometimes on TV. They say, do not do this at home. I mean, maybe you can and you may be close to it. I remember a man, Arthur, who came to see me. And Arthur said to me, he said, I get so nervous, Armand. I don't know what to do when I'm so nervous. He says, I just get nervous. I said, so what would happen if you were just nervous? He said, well, what does that mean? I said, what if you just opened your hands and opened your legs and laid there somewhere and felt nervous? He said, I'd die. I'd have a heart attack. I said, come on, you don't have any heart attacks. What would you do? And I said, I want you to give that consideration. And here's what he reported back to me. He said, I went into my shower. He said, and I was having a shower run over me, and I realized I had the sensation. He said, so I opened my body to feel the nervousness as it was coming over me, and I didn't move. He said, somehow the shower joined the energy that I was feeling, and I felt electrified all over my body. He said, I felt so much buzzing, so much sensation, I wanted to tighten my fists, I wanted to tighten my hand, I wanted to look outside. He said, and all I could do, he says, at first I yelled, because I felt like I was being electrocuted, and I let out a yell. He said, and then I started to cry. And he said, I cried and I cried and I cried. And with every tear, there was a harmony that seemed to come to me. And from that moment on, the man didn't have any anxiety attacks, or for not as long as I knew him, which was about 5 years after that. In fact, I hired him. I told him, you know, he was a social worker and he had gone to school. And I said, oh, come to work for me. You've got a secret. So he used to train people to sit with their feelings. So any of you out there who are in therapy, think of a feeling that you have that you're afraid to feel, reluctant to feel. Then go to your therapist and explain it and say to the therapist, I would like to feel this feeling, but I'm afraid to feel it on my own. Would you sit with me while I feel it? And if the therapist asks you too many questions, they're doing the wrong thing. The main thing they should do is just be there for you. That's a buck well spent. You know, just to see what it's like. Nervousness is one guaranteed. You go through nervousness. Instead of having anxiety attacks, instead of going to get a medication that you've got to take to quell the anxiety, imagine every time you got nervous, if you laid down and you let yourself shake, what do you think would happen to you? I guarantee you, my friends, 22 minutes at the most. 22 minutes, the body exhausts itself. Once you start shaking and shaking and shaking and shaking and trembling, the body exhausts itself. The nerves can't take it anymore. You won't have a heart attack. Your nerves don't take it. They just eventually wear out. And you know what follows? An incredible calm. A great sense of peace. If you felt yourself sad, cry. Cry and 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 keep crying. And don't stop crying. And don't produce ideas about why you're crying. Don't think about how miserable you are and happy you are. Just cry for the sake of the catharsis. And lift your head and see what happens. You'll feel 100% better. Sometimes even tension. Instead of feeling just a little tension, take the tension to its maximum. Tighten your body, tighten your fists, tighten your hands, tighten your back, tighten every part of you till you tremble, and go through all of that. And you tighten and tighten and tighten and tighten and tighten, and then eventually you release it all. And what happens when you release it all? An incredible calm. So, the question becomes, my friends, these are things that you're doing, but we're not talking about the original source. We're not talking about nothingness. We're talking about tools to nothingness. If your nervousness gets in the way of your opening yourself up to just being, to letting go of all of your thoughts, then maybe you got to go through the nervous exercise. If your depression gets in your way, then cry yourself to exhaustion. If tension gets in your way, tense yourself until you can relax, then open yourself. And again, I say that because it's such new territory, it's very, very difficult to do. A good friend of mine, a man who is one of my teachers, once said to me, there is no new learning unless it is accompanied by death. He said, nothing new is born unless you die along the way. And what he meant by death was not actual physical death, but the feeling like you're dying. You get a feeling like you're dying when you're holding on to, when you're having an anxiety attack or a panic attack. You feel like you're dying. He said, but that's essential to transformation because newness comes out of that. Unlike thinking your way into something new, finding something new. Well, I don't know. I hope these words have had meaning to you today. Because they do to me. They do to me. This is what I have learned over the years. And I've had to face so many times. And if you were my best friend, my closest friend, my sister, my love, I would say take it on. See what it's like. And maybe have somebody there who could really handle it, who won't interfere. So, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Back with you. Happy to be with you again. I look forward to the next time that we're together. If you want copies of today's program, you can go to thepositivemind.com and look on the archives. Back with you soon, my friends.
Hi, I'm Rosie Perez, and this is WBAI, listener-supported non-commercial radio in New York.
Hi, this is Delphine Blue inviting you to join me every Tuesday night here on WBAI at 99.5 FM for Shocking Blue from 9 until 11 p.m. That's every Tuesday night right here on member-supported WBAI New York at 99.5 FM.
All right, all right. Shocking Blue with Delphine Blue. That'll be taking place later on this evening. In fact, at 9 p.m. this evening. And we hope that you'll tune in and support that program, Shocking Blue with Delphine Blue. My name is Michael G. Haskins, your radio host and guide weekday afternoons. Coming up next at 2 p.m. will be the Arts Magazine. And at 3 o'clock, Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton. Please visit our website, WBAI.org, and on that website you can find out a lot of information about the radio station in general. Most importantly is how to contribute to keep this listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio station on the air. And by the way, thank you, those of you who made your pledges, and many of you made pledges online during our summer mini-drive. Of course, many of you called up our number, our pledge line, and made contributions that way. But those of you who didn't, you can always make a pledge online at WBAI.org. And thank you. All right. 159 coming up next, the Arts Magazine.